Are we ready with our fingers on the dial? Well, give me a few minutes to get into this. All right, we're going to play You Be the Judge, and it's really simple. We've got a pair of tickets to give away for somebody, some lucky person who's going to be participating today. But here's the deal, and it's really for everybody. We're going to do something called You Be the Judge right now, and it's a pretty simple exercise. I'm going to tell you the facts of a case, and what I'd really love you to do is I'd love you to call in at 203-333-9422 and tell me, if you were the judge, how you would decide the case. Think about the principles that guide you in your life, whether they be what you know about the law or the values that guide you. Or you can just take a good guess at it at 203-333-9422. So we begin. So this is a case. This is a case of a taxi cab driver. And the question about whether or not the taxi cab driver and the taxi cab driver company are liable for what happened. Here's what happened. The cab driver was in a neighborhood in Norwalk that was known to be a high crime neighborhood. But nonetheless, he left his taxi on a driveway or on the street, unattended, to go inside to somebody's house. And he also left the key in the ignition. And while he was gone, two teenagers who were looking to steal something from the car noticed that the key was in the ignition. And they said, hey, let's go for a joyride. So they went on a joyride. The driver was high. He was described as intoxicated and also high on pot. And what they did is on their joyride, they ended up joyriding. I think they ended up in Stamford, ultimately, on their joyride. They went on 95. And at some point, they hit a car, because after all, the person driving was not, he's described as a teenager who was high. Not a great combo for a kid, right, for a driver. And he drives the car, and after he hits a car, he tries to run away from the scene of the accident. So what does he do? He drives up on a curb of a sidewalk and he hits a pedestrian and he severely injures the woman. Millions of dollars in medical damages, in medical costs for this woman. And she is very, very seriously injured. Now, there's something going on criminally with the boys in terms of reckless driving. We know that, but they're teenagers. And so the woman who is the plaintiff in the suit, the person who sues is called the plaintiff. The woman says the real person at fault here is the cab driver. Because if the cab driver hadn't left his cab with the keys in it for these kids to steal and go on a joyride, I never would have been hit by that car. And so I'm suing the cab driver, and under the doctrine of respondeat superior, which is to say the boss of the cab driver, I'm suing the cab company. I'm suing the cab company and the cab driver. That's who's at fault here. That's who I need to get money from. And so it went to a jury trial. And the argument of the cab driver was very simple. It was, yes, this is a terrible thing that happened to you, but I'm not responsible. And the reason I'm not responsible is because we have a doctrine in Connecticut, we have a doctrine in law in general, that is known as superseding cause or intervening cause. And it basically means that no matter what I did, you can't hold me responsible for the criminal, reckless misconduct of this person, whoever would have been able to foresee that he would get up on a sidewalk and he would hit you on the sidewalk behind the wheel of the car. And so because of that, because that was reckless conduct and criminal conduct, not merely negligent conduct, I am not responsible. Now, what happened? It went to a jury trial. And the jury was asked certain questions it had to answer. They're called interrogatories. And the questions that were designed for the jury were very specific. If you answered one as a yes, you went to number two. If you answered two as a yes, you went to number three. If you answered three as a yes, you went to number four. And if you answered four as a yes, you went to number five. And only then, upon a succession of yeses, could you find the in favor of the plaintiff. If anything was a no, the plaintiff could not collect against the defendant. The defendant is, quote, not guilty, not negligent, okay? And so these questions were designed very specifically by the judge because they were questions of law. And you had to make certain findings to find negligence. For example, was there a duty? Was there a dereliction of duty? And then, was the accident proximately caused by, and that's a term of art in law. In other words, were the injuries caused and proximately caused by what happened? And so the question became in this fact pattern, and this is where I want you to be the judge, at 203-333-9422, if you're sitting on the jury, that's what I'm going to ask you, because this eventually went all the way up to the Supreme Court of Connecticut on issues of causation. But I want to know from you, if you're the jury, do you hold the taxi driver responsible for what happened to this woman? Or do you find that there should be this doctrine? It's called the doctrine of intervening cause or superseding cause. Do you think that the doctrine of superseding cause should apply? And what is this doctrine of superseding cause? Well, it's this theory at law that says that a person, the taxi driver, cannot be held responsible because it is not his fault. It is not foreseeable that somebody would take the car and do a hit and run on a sidewalk. What do you think? Is it foreseeable or not? Is it foreseeable? And was his negligent leaving of the key in the car the cause of her injuries? Let me give you a minute to think about that. And we've got a prize. We've got two tickets to Dancing with the Stars at the Ridgefield Playhouse at 203-333-9422. If you're on the jury, is the taxi driver responsible? So some of the law is very, very interesting with this. The judge said to the jury, to put it another way, if you find that the theft of the car and the subsequent driving of the vehicle and resulting accident were intentional acts that were not within the scope of the risk that was created by the cab driver's conduct, then the defendants could not be found responsible for the injuries to the plaintiff, as the conduct would have been the proximate cause of the injuries. All right, we've got a lot of wonderful callers. I see a lot of new people calling into the show. I'm so delighted. Lisa from Milford, hi. Thank you for participating today. Hi. So what do you think about this, Lisa?
I think that the cab driver is absolutely negligent.
And do you think that the cab driver should be responsible for what happened to the woman? In other words, do you see the conduct of the teenagers as being unforeseeable or foreseeable? What do you think?
I see it as being foreseeable because if you are leaving keys in a car, you have to take some responsibility that in this day and age, somebody is going to come and check the doors, even if it's just a one in a million shot, and there are the keys, so they're going to steal the car.
And
no good is going to come of that.
Right. I know that no good is going to come from that. That's right. So let's say it's foreseeable that the car would be stolen and, I don't know, would you think it's foreseeable that they would have been speeding in the car? Sure. Right?
Yes.
Sure.
Yes.
Is it foreseeable they would have gotten into an average car accident in the car? Sure.
Yes.
Absolutely. And so, therefore, you think it's foreseeable that even though she was a pedestrian on a sidewalk, that they would have, in trying to run away from the accident, they would have hit her.
Yes.
You do. All right. All right.
I do.
Okay,
I do.
Lisa. 203-333-9422. We have a bunch of other people who want to weigh in, and for some reason they've gone away. They're coming back. Lisa, I do want to thank you for participating. Would you like to go to Dancing with the Stars at the Ridgefield Playhouse?
I would love it.
Great. Stay on the line. We'll get you those tickets. I believe the night of the event is December 20th, but we'll make sure we get you all the arrangements for you, okay?
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure. I want to thank you for participating. This is the Lisa Wexler Show at 203-333-9422. I want you to tell me, do you think that the driver should be responsible for what happened? I will tell you that this case went all the way up to the Connecticut Supreme Court, from the jury trial to the appellate court to the Supreme Court. So you tell me, do you think that the act of the teenagers was so superseding, was so intervening, that the taxi driver should not be held responsible for leaving the keys in his car? 203-333-9422. We'll be right back. And welcome back. We are in the throes. We are in the middle of a You Be the Judge, and we're taking your calls. Very quick fact pattern if you're joining us. The quick fact pattern is very simple. There was a taxi cab driver who walked out of his cab and left the keys in it. He went into the house and he left the keys in his car. And some teenagers that were high took the car on a joyride and they got into an accident. And they wanted to avoid the accident. So they went up on a curb and they hit a woman on the sidewalk. And they delivered significant, horrible injuries to this woman, literally incurring millions of dollars in medical bills. And there was a jury trial on whether or not the cab driver was negligent, because we know that the cab driver shouldn't have left the keys in his car. But the defense said, excuse me, under the doctrine of intervening cause, what we call superseding cause, the cab driver can't be held responsible in negligence for something that was a reckless act of misconduct. It's not fair. Nobody could foresee that somebody would do something as heinous as get up on a sidewalk and try and kill a pedestrian. So what do you think? How did the jury decide it? And this case, incidentally, went all the way up to the Supreme Court because of the very technical issue of whether the interrogatories, the questions that were given to the jury, were proper according to law. But I'm going to the essence of what you would have thought if you were on the jury. So let's go to Tom from Monroe. Hi, Tom. What do you think?
Hi, Lisa. I feel like the children should be held responsible. The teenagers who got into the car, we're not making children responsible for their actions today. That's a big problem we have in society today, that children are not taught from their parents the right and wrong. And when they are wrong like this and becoming high and doing harm, you know, they get away with things like this, and they can always feel like, you know, they can just keep doing things like this and holding people responsible, other people responsible for things that they do.
Right. No, I understand that, Tom. And the question of, to the extent that they were punished outside the civil system, was not addressed in this case. This was simply a question about jury civil damages as to whether or not the cab driver should be held responsible. The children were subject to the juvenile justice system, and I don't know what happened with them because it's not in the case. But what do you think about the cab driver?
He should not be held responsible. I think the person that went after the cab driver was looking for money because they felt the child or the teenagers had none to go after. So I thought they were looking for a financial payout.
That is what they were looking
going
for.
After
That's
yeah,
correct.
They were going after the money.
And you don't think that the cab driver should be held responsible because you think these were
criminal
acts?
Not at all.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Not at all.
I really appreciate that. That is the other point of view. Let's go to Ralph from West Haven. Ralph, what do you think about this?
Oh, hi. Well, I think Tom got it right. I mean, the motivation there obviously is the teenagers don't have any resources, so you go to where you can get some money. But as far as the culpability, I'm not a lawyer. Believe me, not even close.
Mm-hmm.
But the culpability is concerned. I can't see how you can possibly fault the cab driver for not foreseeing an event which statistically is like better than winning the lotto. Keys are left in cars all the time, but the fraction of times when the keys are left in the car leading to that kind of accident and that kind of damage it's impossibly rare to even calculate. I really feel sorry for the lady. I mean, Jesus, I mean, all that kind of damage done to her, it was not her fault. And I don't know how she's going to cover that herself. But unfortunately, I don't see how the cab driver or, by extension, the cab company can be held liable.
All right. I thank you so much, Ralph. And I appreciate that. That's such a thoughtful response. So thank you, Ralph, Tom, and Lisa. So let me tell you what happened here. It's a little bit complicated, so I'm going to try and simplify it. One of the questions that was asked the jury was whether the paragraph, it's called the charge that the judge gives to the jury, and it instructed the jury to consider whether the theft of the taxi cab and the resulting accident involved intentional acts that were outside the scope of the risk created by the cab driver's conduct. And the judge instructed the jury that if the jury found that these acts were outside the scope of the risk created by the conduct, similar to what Ralph was just saying, that you wouldn't normally anticipate if you leave the keys in your car something like this to happen, then the defendants should not be found responsible for the injuries because the conduct of the two teens would have been the proximate cause of the injuries. In other words, and because it was the conduct of the teens, it could not then be the conduct of the defendants. And in fact, that's what the jury found. The jury found that this behavior was outside the scope. So they directed a verdict in favor of the defendants. In other words, they found that the cab driver was not liable. This case went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the appellate court affirmed the trial court. But at the Supreme Court level, they reversed. And the reason they reversed is that they found that the jury had been given inconsistent interrogatories, that what the judge had done has asked them. Remember I told you the questions were, if you answer this, it's yes. If you answer this, you get to yes and yes and yes and yes. They found that questions 4 and 5 were legally inconsistent with each other. And therefore, they remanded down and they reversed. But the jury, so we had by 2-1 here in our own little court on the Lisa Wexler Show, the jury found that the cab driver would not be liable because the jury found that this superseding event of what the teenagers did was outside the scope of the risk that would have been caused by leaving one's keys in the car. So there it is. It's a few minutes before 12. And I very much appreciate your participation and you be the judge. We all learn something, don't we? It's very, very interesting. This concept of superseding cause or intervening cause is something that the courts in Connecticut over time have ruled to be narrower and narrower. In other words, most courts don't like it. They would prefer to find the cab drivers negligent most of the time. Because this idea that somebody commits an intervening act that lets out the negligence from someone else, that's become increasingly, the courts frown on it. The law is frowning on it. It still exists, but you have to find a very significant compelling fact pattern in order to win that case.